Welcome to Radio Today broadcasting in Johannesburg on 1485 AM and nationally on DSTV Audio, channel 869.
The last album and we got them to sing harmonies.
It's Tuesday. It's not Tuesday, Eddie. You confused me. That's Eddie's fault. It's Thursday. It's 2 o'clock. It's time for...
Snips and Snippets!
That was okay, hey? Yeah. And as Mango Groove fades into the distance, it's a very good afternoon from me, Jonathan Taylor, and as usual, Eddie on my right, pushing buttons and sliding knobs. Going to start off a little bit differently today. I've got two studio guests, as usual, but before I introduce them, we're going to play a song. It's a song called Like a River.
Like a river, it will flow easier with time. Oh, a heart is like a river, it will flow easier with time. Glowing, I was growing, and now you flow right next to mine. Your loving is my flavor, lemon cream, strawberry. Strawberry pie. You're my sweet dream, my ice cream, yeah. And now you flow right next to mine.
Well, that's the sound of Kathy Raven with a song from her new album called Rooibos Tea. She is a rooibos tea lover, I know that, and I like the music in spite of the title because I'm not a rooibos tea fan. And I have Kathy in the studio with me today. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's actually the Rooibos Tea Blues, by the way.
The Rooibos Tea is, was
yeah,
that the Rooibos
just,
Tea
just
Blues?
So we know what the what kind of genre is we're talking about here. Yeah.
Oh, was that not Like a River?
That was Like a River, but like the album's called the Rooibos Tea Blues.
The album's called the Rooibos Tea Blues.
Yeah,
and
yeah. It would take too long to explain why. So.
My other guest is somebody who is no stranger to the blues of a different kind, and that's Philippa Sklar. That's a very well-known name in this town and country. And yes, it is that family, but we won't go into that just yet. Welcome, Philippa.
Thank you very much.
Now, Philippa's just released a book called When Loving Him Hurts, which is, you're a serial abusee, if I may call that.
Yes, a serial marriage, wedding, what could we call it? Finding, I had an incredible knack for finding abusers.
Abusers, yeah.
Yeah.
And yet you've had, what, three abusive marriages and one abusive relationship before that?
Yes.
Yeah. How are you still alive?
Good question. Huh? I think Sue, it was because of Sue. Sue co-wrote the book with me, and she's a therapist, and she's had 30 years' experience dealing with abused women. And it was with a huge amount of effort and, you know, forcing myself to challenge what my patterns were.
Yeah.
And then changing from the inside out.
Just to enlighten my listener, Sue Hickey is a psychologist who's written this book with Philippa. You can see Philippa's text, it's in a different font. And there are a number of things that I latched onto. First of all, I must just say I picked up a copy of the book yesterday, and intending just to kind of skim through it and see what jumped out at my eye, I found myself reading the whole book.
I love to hear that.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that in a moment. Kathy, mm-hmm. your music.
My music, yes, Jonathan.
I seem to think of you as a folk singer, a blues singer. Would that be right?
I grew up doing both.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad was a jazz and blues musician.
Who was your dad?
His name was Bill Grant. He recorded with the Decca label in the 60s.
Ah, okay. Because
yeah. So and
for some reason the name Duffy Ravenscroft came.
Yeah.
To me.
No. That's not my dad. Well, not yeah. that I know of. You yeah. know.
And tell me
my
about.
My mom might have been naughty.
Tell me about this album. Is there a theme to it? Is there a story behind it? Is it? Have you? Did you just? I suddenly find you've written 12 songs and they're all pretty good, so let's put them on an album.
Yeah, I've done that with about four, so
yeah.
You know, hopefully we write another 12 and we get another album.
Yeah.
But
what are your main musical influences? I mean, what drives you as a musician?
If my dad used to say that if he had his way, he would have the only thing he regretted in his life, and we really resonated with each other, you know, had a fantastic relationship with him, was that he wasn't born black and in New Orleans. And I think that a lot of my influence comes from the music of blues that came from Africa first,
yeah.
and then went to the States and then came back as blues.
As blues, it kind of morphed into New Orleans style.
Yeah, and that's what I study, is that kind of music, is how did that evolve? And then I try to bring that influence back here by adding a South African flavor back to the blues again here. So it's kind of reclaiming it from America.
Now that's the musical influence. What are
yeah.
the lyrics? Where do you draw your lyrics from?
Well, I think it's, you know, like any writer, you are in the world, or any, you know, of the kind of creative writing that I do. You're in the world, you look around you, you absorb what's happening in your own life, in other people's lives, in your country. And then you put that into a format, and if it sounds beautiful, if it's art, then you put it to music.
Yeah.
And hopefully the music's good.
That's an interesting question.
So
if
that's
it
what
is art, because
yeah, yeah, because I've written a whole lot of bleep, 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 bleep. Also.
Yeah.
And
course.
There's like cupboards and cupboards of horrible songs, you know, that'll never see the light of day.
Someone once told me you have to write 100 rubbish songs to get one good one.
I don't think that's true.
Although
how do you get that statistic? But anyway.
Well, I tell you where I got that yeah. statistic. Elton John, when he was working for EMI, before he got a recording contract.
Sheesh, what a writer, man.
But they allowed him to make demos of songs that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
He did 100 demos before they actually released a single.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you know, so that is a lot of rubbish.
No, but that's not looking for good music. That's looking for a hit single.
That's looking for a
pop song. That's a very different thing.
True, but it's
you know,
just
those guys are looking for a pop song. There are probably some really beautiful jazz songs in there.
The faith that they had
right?
in him.
Yeah. Now, what an amazing writer.
Are you performing anywhere at the moment? Can anyone see you?
Yeah, we're playing. I was just saying that we're playing on Saturday night at the Radium Beer Hall.
Oh, right.
And
you with?
So the guy who's playing guitar with me is Mike Mehring. He plays with a band called Highway Jam. He's one of our very best guitarists, I think, in the country. Not just saying that to, you know, dangle a carrot, guys. Really, he's one of the best. I hope he's listening. And then Ben Amato, he's a multi-instrumentalist. So we do like an acoustic blues night.
Lovely.
And a couple of surprise guests as well.
So
but we've been playing the Radium for about 15 years.
Radium seems to be kind of a regular haunt one.
Completely, yeah. It's like
once you find your
it's like my
there.
Cheers. Remember that TV show called Cheers where you can go in and know everybody and
feel
safe? It's like that, yeah. It's an awesome space.
Well, let's see how good you are on other music. We're going to play a round of Snips and Snippets.
Okay.
I don't know how much of it we're going to get through because we've got a lot to talk about today. But put your headphones on, please. You're going to hear a short little piece of music. You will if your headphones are on.
You'll beat me hands down.
Am I hearing anything? I'm not hearing anything in mine. No, I've turned the volume up on mine now. Now I am hearing it. You're going to hear a short little snip of music.
Okay.
And if you can identify the name of the tune from the first snip, it's 3 points. And if you get the name of the artist, it's 1 point.
Oh.
And then I've got two other snips.
Three and one. Okay.
Well, yeah. If
let me write this down.
If I have to play a second snip, it'll be 2 points once. And then I've got some trivia questions. Could we have snip number one, please, Eddie?
Jai Guru.
It sounds very familiar,
so
doesn't it?
So familiar, I know exactly. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, what do you think? I think maybe it sounds like Sinead O'Connor singing Swedish or something.
No, that I know is wrong.
No, it's not Sinead O'Connor. And it's
Bjork?
Not Swedish.
No, it's going to drive me crazy.
No. It sounds like Bjork as well.
No.
Oh, I love Bjork.
No.
Hey?
No.
It sounds pretty sort of lonely and sad.
I'll give you a clue. The words, I think, are the words, the lyrics of that little bit are probably Sanskrit.
Oh.
But let's have snip number two, please, Sanskrit. Eddie, for 2 points.
So we're doing a separate snip now.
Sounds of laughter.
Oh!
It's now it's English.
Sounds of laughter.
That sounds like Debbie Harry. No, I mean,
no,
that sounds like...
No. Oh, God, I told you I'm going to be useless.
I have no idea who that is.
I think
is.
I chose my snips very well because it's a very well-known song.
And of course it is.
If you know the band. Snip number three, Eddie. Let's put them out there, Missouri.
Okay,
that's from Across the Universe.
It's Across the Universe.
God, that's
That's a point for Kathy. But now... The big question. Who is singing?
So it's actually a Beatles song, right?
It's a Beatles song, but who is singing it?
She's that cute girl with the blonde hair and the big eyes.
It's not.
No.
Play it again.
Eddie, just give us a clue then. Whose side are you on?
Eddie
there,
knows nothing. He was... It's not an actress, although she has acted, she did act in a couple
Gwyneth
of things.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
It's not Gwyneth Paltrow. No, we have to go older than that. I'll give you a clue.
Okay.
She passed on just a few days ago. That's why I picked her.
Cilla Black, isn't it?
Cilla Black. There we go now.
I am so impressed with myself, I cannot get over myself that I got one right.
Yeah.
You
go, girl.
Do you know what her surname is?
No.
White.
Correct.
I'm 8 points
again.
That
one
wasn't a question.
That's 1 point.
I read the article the other day, guys.
She worked as a part-time job before she was determined to become an entertainer.
Yeah.
She worked as a part-time job as a cloakroom attendant at a particularly well-known music club.
Oh.
What club was that?
What city was it in?
I'll give you a point if you can tell me the city, and it wasn't London.
Liverpool.
Well done, Philippa.
Well done.
Philippa.
Wow.
So what club was in Liverpool?
There was only one music
club. The Whiskey A Go Go.
There was only one club in
That's
in LA. In Liverpool.
Oh, right.
There was only one music club in Liverpool.
Abbey Street something.
No. That Abbey Road Studios
Abbey
was
Road,
in London.
No, that was London. Liverpool.
I'm going to tell you.
Oh, come on, tell us.
It was the Cavern.
I would never have done that.
The
Cavern Club.
We're too young to know that, exactly. Didn't you know?
But you've heard about the band that championed her, haven't you?
Silly Black's band.
Yeah, this was the band that kind of championed her and pushed her into the career, into her career. They backed her in her early recordings.
Yeah.
The name of that band, they also played at the Cavern.
Sheesh, man. Yeah. You know?
It's an obscure band.
Yeah, that,
but,
you're getting pretty obscure.
Not
there,
many
Major.
People have heard of them.
So who are they?
Some little band called the Beatles.
I bet that we said that!
Did you say the Beatles? Did they say the Beatles?
Yeah, we thought so.
Now, Eddie is the final judge.
Yeah.
And...
We actually telepathized the answer, both of us, but we never actually said it,
I
right?
I will give you 1 point each.
So I think we need 1 point each for
1 point
for
each
working
for
well together.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
She first signed with a friend and neighbor, Terry McCann, but this contract was never honored as it was signed when she was underage. The age of majority was then 21, and her father subsequently signed her with a very famous manager. What was his name?
Nope.
No.
No, Brian Epstein?
No.
Not heard of Brian Epstein?
No.
I've heard of him, but I would never know that he managed her.
Who backed her in her very first audition?
The Beatles.
Correct.
Good for you. You're cheating.
We're getting a hang of it now, aren't we? excuse me. She recorded a cover song written for Dionne Warwick.
Yeah.
And her recording beat Dionne Warwick's into the charts. Do you know what the name of that song was? I'll give you a clue. It was her first big hit. But a lot of people don't know this. Her first big hit was a cover. But she sold more and reached the top of the charts before the original artist.
Oh, man. I know that song. I just can't remember the name. Sorry, guys.
It's called Anyone Who Had a Heart.
Uh-huh. Sing a bit.
Anyone Who Had a Heart.
Eddie,
don't sing.
Unless you can do another harmony, Eddie.
Hold me in his arms and love me too.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyone Who Had a Heart.
Okay, clearly we're not very good at this. Can we play another game?
She once publicly, humbly apologized for something.
Yeah.
Which wasn't really her fault.
Yeah.
What did she apologize for?
For singing a flat note at Carnegie Hall.
No, she apologized for reality television.
Ah, there you go.
Now, she was born in 1943. Mm. Which, just a few questions about 1943. The world's largest office building at the time was completed in 1943. Do you know what that was?
The Empire State.
No. At the time, I think the Empire State was in the 50s, wasn't it?
Okay, 43.
It was the Pentagon.
Oh.
Whose PT-109 was sunk
by... The Pentagon is an office building?
Yeah, it's the office building.
For the, okay,
it's the
specifically
office headquarters
for...
of
Yeah, yeah. You could have said something cocky there, then we would have got that.
I could have.
But I was thinking city, you know? Sorry. Take 1 point off Jonathan, please.
What was the name of the lieutenant who was in command of a PT-109 that was sunk by a Japanese destroyer? In 1943.
Oh, not a clue.
General Harkham.
No.
Do you just come up with this stuff?
I'm just making it up.
I do give points for creative answers if they make us all laugh.
Okay, well, I was thinking of sort of bringing my guitar out and playing the guitar, because that would at least make it entertaining.
You could do that as well. And I believe your guitar's a Taylor as well.
Yeah.
Which
is
good.
Yeah.
No, you've heard of this person.
Yeah.
In fact, it was John F. Kennedy.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He was pretty cute as well.
What invention was brought out by Jacques Cousteau and Emile Gagnon in 1943?
Cousteau.
Heard of Jacques Cousteau,
I've definitely heard of Cousteau.
Jacques Cousteau.
It had to do something with exploration in the deep.
In the deep, yeah. So what did he invent to make exploring the deep a lot easier?
He invented a
submarines.
No, not a submarine.
One of those cages with the.
Not a cage. I'll tell you. Okay. It was an aqualung.
He did not invent the aqualung, did he?
Yes, he invented the
aqualung. Do I get 1 point for the deep thing?
No. Ah. We take a little break and we listen to the lovely late Cilla Black with Across the Universe.
Okay, great.
words are flying out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither while they pass, they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my open mind, possessing and caressing me. Jai Guru Dela. Oh, nothing's gonna change my world. 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 Images of broken light which dance before me like a million eyes. They call me on and on across the universe. Thoughts meander like a restless wind inside a letterbox. They tumble blinded as they make their way across the universe. Jai Guru.
Get one free stickies with every 150 rand you spend this weekend at Pick and Pay with everyday low prices. Buy any 2 1-litre assorted sachets of P&P fresh milk for 16 rand 90. Any 2 assorted 1 kilogram Parmalat low-fat or Fabulite fat-free yogurt is 38 rand. Any 3 assorted 500 gram Flora fat spread are 49.90. 30 Pick and Pay no-name large eggs are 33 rand 90. And 170 grams Pick and Pay no-name shredded tuna in water is 8 rand 90. Go on, collect them, trade them, and play the craziest games. Stickies, only at Pick and Pay. Prices are valid from the 6th to the 10th of August.
The Barnyard Group of Theatres is a sought-after, distinctive, relaxed and affordable family, corporate and fundraising entertainment destination. Watch a show with a drink or pizza from the theatre, or bring your own food. Barnyard is about live music shows where you will be rocked to your feet and captivated by the contagious spirit and energy of the performers. For the love of music, come and be entertained at your local Barnyard Theatre. For further information, visit www.barnyardtheatres.co.za or call 011-467-6983. Barnyard Theatres, where it all comes together. Friendship, good food, wine and brilliant entertainment.
Hi, I'm David Severs.
Hi, you're listening to Harry Sideropoulos.
I'm Malcolm Terry.
Hello, from Michael Richard.
Hello, from Fiona Ramsey.
And if you're listening to us,
then you're lucky enough to be listening to Radio Today.
Today, South Africans share their lives with you here on Radio Today.
And here on Radio Today, Kathy Raven is leading Philippa Sklar by just 1 point, 4 points to three. We might have another round later on to help you try and catch up. But Philippa, this book that you've come out with Sue Hickey, like I said earlier, I read the whole thing in one day, and I've just made a couple of notes here. For instance, Philippa appears to be the epitome of self-confidence. True.
Yes.
When she arrives in the room, she has the X factor. This is absolutely true. When I saw you walking up the stairs through the window, and I thought, yeah, definitely the X factor.
Thank you.
Now, it goes on then to say that that's actually the veneer, and underneath, things are happening very differently.
Yes.
Are you still that person?
Not at all.
Not.
No, no, I don't recognize who that person was.
Yeah. Who was that person? Tell us.
Well, when I look back now, somebody who had absolutely no self-esteem, thought that I used to think that the only person that I could get in my life is somebody who beat me, lied to me, cheated, was an alcoholic, was a drug addict. I thought
why?
That's all.
Why do you think that is what you thought about yourself?
Because I kept repeating the same pattern. Mm. Those were the men I kept drawing into my life. You know, it's also a misconception that we are chosen, that we are victims. We are not victims. Mm. We actually choose
your
them, just like they choose us. That's what the dance of abuse is. And I only associated love with work and with feeling needed. And who better to work for than somebody who's an abuser? Because your day's work is never done. So I needed their pathology in order for my pathology to feel like it was working.
Phew. At what point did you realize that was a syndrome that was coming from you?
It was after my third marriage. Yeah. When I left this country after my second marriage, I just thought that the problem was with the men in my life. I never thought it was me. But what I did was I just relocated my pathology and myself to Los Angeles. And I was there 6 months and I met the next man. And because there were no substances, my second husband was addicted to substances. So I used to blame, not in the beginning because I was there for 7 years, but it was easy for me to blame the substances as to why he was beating me. But then he would beat me when he was stone cold sober. And that's when I had to accept that being an abuser is a disease totally, it has its own symptoms, it has its own madness, and it's totally separate from addiction. So when I got to America and I met this man, I thought this was Prince Charming, that there were no substances. And when I married him, I never understood why I felt exactly the same as if I was living with an abuser, and it didn't make any sense to me. I never really understood what emotional abuse was. Physical abuse I knew, but emotional abuse, it was like something that was so foreign to me. And that's the problem that the majority of women don't even recognize, that they're in an emotionally abusive relationship. And I phoned Sue from LA, and she actually finally got me to face my patterns and what it was about me that attracted these men.
Mm. There's another note that I made. There's one part of the one chapter of the book is called The Profile of the Abused Woman, the codependency. And it's almost as if you are addicted to this codependency.
Yes. Well, and codependents are, well, there are different symptoms that go into being a codependent. Firstly, we associate love with work and approval, that we are only validated if there's a man in our life. Hmm. We also have no self-esteem. We are always looking to work and to save men. We always fall in love with a man's potential. So that was the syndrome, and also being a relationship addict, that because I never ever felt worthwhile if I was on my own. Only if there was a man in my life, I thought that I was worth something. Being with an abuser, a violent abuser, was better than being with nobody. So I thought that anybody was better than nobody.
Do you think this had anything to do with the kind of situation you were in when you left school in that you say in the book that you were really trained for nothing, that you had no skills. All you knew was how to cook and dress to the nines.
I actually only learned to cook when I got married the first time. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I was brought up with a father who believed that it was beneath me to work, that I should just get whatever I wanted. We had this game, my father
probably
and
came,
I...
Sorry. That probably came from the most loving, good place in his own heart.
Probably, yes. That it was unladylike to work and deal with money, and that a man's job was to support a woman, and women can't look after themselves. So we had this game, my father and I. He would say, do you want it or need it? And I would say, I want it. And he would open his wallet. Mm. So I grew up believing, well, I should just be with men with an open wallet. So I always found these men of means, and they were always the meanest of men.
But now,
I like that.
Yeah, your dad was married to a woman, your mother, who is exactly the opposite of what you're describing. I mean, she's not just a housewife. She's a larger-than-life personality, has had a career as an actress. How did he equate those two? Those two, it's almost like a dichotomy there.
Well, it is, and everything in life is, you know, there's a paradox to everything. Mm. You know, even though my mother was working in the theater, my father, when he would have his accountant coming over, my mother had to leave the room. Mm. My mother never had a checkbook. He would give her unlimited amounts of cash, but she could never have a checkbook.
And your theater salary? Did that?
Oh, well, that meant nothing. What was that? Nothing.
this is true. I don't know. I'm living on a non-existent one at the moment. But it's very much that I get the impression that in the book that abusive relationships are marriages made in hell, but they are a match for each other. They have to find each other.
That's correct.
In order for this. Do you know of any relationships, maybe you do, Kathy, where the guy is actually perhaps an abuser, intrinsically an abuser, but his wife is not a codependent?
It wouldn't work that way.
Then it wouldn't last.
Would the abuse not work, or would the marriage not work?
They wouldn't have even got married. Yeah. You have to have the certain pathology for the two of them to hook up. Mm. Mm. You must know that when I was a chronic codependent, every normal man that ever appeared on my horizon, they weren't even on my radar. I wouldn't have given them the time of day. I would have thought they were too boring.
Too boring, just not exciting enough.
Yeah.
And how much did, I mean, I had the impression all your abusive husbands were pretty well off.
Yes.
There was no one who was struggling. Was that part of the attraction?
Well, you must know, my bar was very low. A man just had to have money and be good looking, and I would marry him. That was it. Never looked at the character. never examined the character of the man. Mm. Which is ridiculous. And women don't. We women spend more time choosing a pair of shoes than we do the man in our lives.
Well, then you must spend a lot of time, because I know you've got a lot of shoes.
Oh, I do.
Well, the other thing that I loved about the book, besides that it is a self-help book. It's not just a biography. It's a self-help book. At the end of every chapter, there are these reflections that you can do and little exercises you can do that you actually say, write them down rather than just do them in your head. But a lot of the focus is on how to stay in the relationship and make it work.
Well, this is the option that we give women. If you're in a physically abusive relationship, you need to leave.
The physical, yes.
If you're in an emotionally abusive relationship, the majority of women cannot leave. They've got children, their financial responsibilities, and they can't leave. So we say, fine. We can say to you, if you're going to stay, you can't stay the same. You need to change. Mm. You're not the problem, but you are the solution.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, yeah, sure.
If you say that there's an emotionally abusive relationship and that you can actually work it and fix it, do you find in your research that a lot of the time in an emotionally abusive relationship, both partners have some emotional abuse issues that they bring to the party, and then it's kind of evens the playing field out, and then you could heal together?
We don't say that you stay in the relationship to heal the abuser or the relationship. You're healing yourself. You can never heal the abuser.
Yeah. No, but I mean that. But do you find that with the emotional abuse, that both partners have those tendencies to abuse emotionally?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there's something that we talk about in the book where we have one of the strategies is going from warrior, as in worrying, to being a warrior, as in defending yourself.
Yes.
And one of the things that I recognize, and this happens so often with women who are abused,
yeah.
is that we take on the exact behavior of the abuser, and I would abuse my children's teachers. I would abuse my yeah. hairdressers. I would
yeah.
abuse
yeah.
people in, you know, yeah. service providers.
And defuse it somewhere else, right?
Well,
the energy.
Nothing,
yeah.
It is so ugly when you turn into an abuser.
Yeah.
So these are all the things and the different layers that we talk about. That's why we wrote it, that it's from a survivor's point of view, who know that I know all the nuances and all the lies we tell ourselves, because we lie to ourselves all the time.
Yeah.
And then from the therapeutic point of view, so that we actually we bust myths around domestic abuse. And we and I'm the first one to say that I absolutely take full responsibility for being abused.
Yeah.
The first time he hit me, sure, that was shame on him.
Yeah.
But there's a story I tell in the book, and I don't know if there's time to tell it.
Please.
Yeah. Oh, we were in Thailand on holiday, and it was the last day we were leaving for the airport, and he received a call, and he was having this inappropriate flirty conversation with somebody on the phone. And when he put the phone down, I asked him, and he came up to me and he hit me so hard over the head that I dropped to the ground. And I remember just lying on the carpet floor smelling the hotel carpet.
Yeah.
And he walked to the door and he flung over his shoulder. He said, "I'm going to breakfast." And I lay there crying, mortified, not knowing what to do with myself. Got dressed, chose something very, you know, carefully what I was going to wear, did my face, went to the dining room, walked past him, went to sit at my own table, refused to look at him, and then he came to beg and to grovel. And I felt so special.
Yeah.
And then on the way to the airport, he had his arm around me the whole way. Oh, that was love. You know, so that's the craziness that abused women.
It's almost like this old thing of banging your head against the wall because it's so nice when it stops.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also you must remember that when it switches, when he's begging for love and begging for forgiveness and apologizing, then the balance of power shifts. Then I'm feeling in control and I'm feeling powerful.
Mm.
And then it switches and it keeps turning. And that's the dance of abuse. That's the cycle.
Mm. And I can't remember if it was your story or one of the others, because there are quite a few women who were quoted here. There's Tanya and Anna and a few of the others, where she talks about his birthday was coming up,
yes.
and she wanted to get the right gift.
Yes.
And asked all the male friends and eventually came up with a gift that still didn't please.
Well, that's you know, the birthday present.
Yes.
With an abuser, you can never do anything right, ever. And what happens with us is that that's part of our sickness, because we then go into work mode and we're obsessing and we're thinking, the fact that she had to phone all these friends, can you see what her pathology is?
Yeah.
Instead of saying, well, whatever I do for you, you're never going to like it, so I'm doing nothing.
Yeah.
Codependence, the hardest thing for a codependent is to do nothing.
Mm.
That's why in the strategies of teaching women how to empower themselves, we actually give them physical things that they have to do, like the geranium ritual, about bearing your resentment, about making a dream maker, which is a collage. So the actual physical things that you have to do.
And the thing about the birth just reminded me, my ex-wife used to ask me, your birthday's coming up, what do you want for your birthday? Now, I've never been able to order a birthday present. And she was always able. She said, you know, I want the Kalinetics tape. Please, hint, 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 want the Kalinetics tape. That year, I bought her the Kalinetics tape, but I hid it. And first, I gave her a book on a woman's guide to watching cricket on TV with your husband or something. And she opens it. And I said, do you like it? She said, yes. You know. But I always used to say to her, I want you to buy a birthday present of something that you want me to have, not that I want, but something that you want me to have. So whatever you get me is going to be appreciated if that's what you want me to have. And
well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
But I think it's Anna who complained that if her husband wanted a snack or something, if she brought out peanuts, he'd
because
say, why aren't they roasted?
Yes.
He brought out this, why aren't they there?
Yeah.
So she went and bought up a whole stock of various kinds of snacks and candies, filled them up in a garbage bag. And when he asked for a snack, she came and just poured the whole garbage bag over him. I love the story, but
that's
in the
great
book,
idea.
But in the book, it doesn't say what his reaction was or what the follow-up was, yeah. and what the effect of that was. Do you know?
Yes, well, he was just furious. Furious that how dare she stand up to him. When yeah. women start getting it, that start empowering themselves,
yeah.
you know, Sue had a support group for many, many years, and she was actually terrified that these women were getting so strong in the support group that one of them were going to end up getting killed yeah. because they would go home with this rage mm. and refuse to be abused anymore. You know, when you stop playing that game, because it is a game, mm. the abuser will almost like crank up the ante to make it even more difficult for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why you need strategies. One of the things, for example, is to cultivate indifference. So when you're in a conversation with an abuser, there is no point in responding or trying mm. to defend yourself or trying to explain yourself. So we talk about cultivating indifference, not to be an indifferent person, but just choosing not to respond in a conversation where you know there won't be a happy outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the way to deal with a bully, ignore.
That's right.
Switch yeah. off. The that, silence yeah. That you talk about.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. What I love also, I'm going to read a quote here, which is, because one of the things I found with this book is that there's a lot of advice here, not just for abused women, but for men, but also just general.
Yes, it's about, I think that...
It's about life, I mean...
About relationships.
For instance, there's a quote here by Gandhi on attitude. And yes, in the abused relationship, you have to cultivate indifference, as you say, and cultivate your attitude. There's a quote here, be happy, it drives people crazy. But Mahatma Gandhi explains the stepping stones to building an attitude. And that's a destiny. And I love this. Keep your thoughts positive because your thoughts become your words. Keep your words positive because your words become your behavior. Keep your behavior positive because your behavior becomes your habits. Keep your habits positive because your habits become your values. Keep your values positive because your values become your destiny.
It's lovely, huh?
I think in order to get the full effect of that and really understand it, you've got to kind of put it up on the wall and look at it every yeah. day. Mm. But what I'm saying is this book is not just for abused women. Mm. It's for anybody in a situation that it's basically the thing is you can't change the situation, so you change your response to it.
Well, it's life skills. That's exactly yeah. right.
Exactly right.
You know,
yeah.
one of the things, you know, just to talk about that story I just told you in Thailand, that's one of the things that abused women do, is that we call it the nodding no, that we say no, but we're actually saying yes. Mm. So what I taught him from that incident was that it was okay to beat me.
Mm.
So when you read this out about Mahatma Gandhi, it's about your word is everything, and to be trustworthy. For the longest time, I wasn't trustworthy. Nothing had any value. Nothing. There was no such thing as trust. I cheated on the men I was with. I never understood what it was to be with somebody who was trustworthy. I wasn't trustworthy. And that was one of the things that I loathed about myself, that I had to know that I was able to be a trustworthy person. Mm. Because, you know, slowly from not having any self-esteem, that was one of the things. So when I became trustworthy, my self-esteem started growing. So women who are abused, we actually have no values. We have no direction. So you actually have to start with such crazy concepts like how on earth are you not trustworthy? We mirror what our abuser is.
Mm. You're talking about self-esteem, and it was just resonating with something I was going to ask you about, but then, you know, the conversation went away. Going back to your dad, about how he treated you like a princess, you know. It seems to me like he set you up as a princess, saying that my princess mustn't work, my princess mustn't get her hands dirty or worry about money. You're too special for that. And it's almost, we've heard the phrase, you can kill someone with kindness. Now, to me, it would seem intuitive that if your parents put you on such a pedestal that your self-esteem would actually be higher. But it seems to have worked in the reverse.
Because it wasn't just that.
Yeah.
He was also highly critical of me. So it was both. It was, you know, on the one hand, you know, everything in life is a paradox. Everything is really concealed and then it's revealed when you go, when you start scratching the surface. So on the one hand, yeah, that's how he brought me up. Another level, he was unbelievably critical of me. So, you know, when I got divorced the first time, he was furious with me constantly. Why wasn't I married? I mean, my mother had this saying that single women have no status. So I had no status. I was just a nothing. I didn't have a man in my life. So I better find a husband quickly.
Now, it's interesting because you started off your adult life after school with no skills, no way of earning a living, and went into abusive relationships. And it's almost as if those abusive relationships have given you your calling in life now.
Yes, that's exactly right. I'm now on a mission to save every woman out there.
But what about you personally now? I mean, are you over the addiction of
abusive? Oh, my God, yes, yes. You know, when we wrote this book, there were many women that Sue wanted to get their stories from them and to go back and, you know, ask them what happened. And a lot of them resisted it because it was still too painful. For me, I would just be in raucous laughter, Sue and I, at the madness, as these crazy things I used to do. Some of the things were so mad, I wouldn't even tell her at the time. So now, you know, after all these years, Jonathan, I don't know who that woman was, who was in these relationships, what my thought patterns were. I don't know. It's not even as if that person is a distant relation to me. I have no idea who that person is.
And what about now? I mean, if you meet a man that you think is quite attractive, are you in a relationship now?
No. But I have a brilliant bullshit detector. So, you know, I pick up the signs immediately.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to ask any abused woman, if they look back at their relationships, I guarantee you that every one of them, there would have been an incident before they married them.
I want to ask you another question now, and this is maybe the self-doubt in myself. Whenever I read of abusive relationships and abused husbands and abusing men and psychopaths or whatever, there's always a little part of me, and it could come from the age-old Jewish guilt thing, is, could I be like that? What are the signs that a man can look for in himself to try and avert that abusiveness? You know, because I don't think any man intends to be an abuser.
Oh, absolutely. I think there are. There's some that just have that pathology or have just brought up on that damage and aren't even aware of it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're not aware of it.
But here's the thing. In the book, we have something called the bully barometer.
Yes.
And if women answer 12, there's 16 symptoms. If women answer 12 to them, they're being abused, and men can do the same thing.
Where are they?
And you know, it's, you know, Sue often says that, you know, when she gets women who come into therapy, a lot of the women will come in and say, describe that they're in these very unhappy marriages and their husbands don't love them anymore and they're suffering from depression and anxiety. And it's only from talking to them after a couple of weeks that it's obvious that they're living with an abuser. And yet there are also women who come and say, oh, I'm living with an abuser, but no, you're just in a shitty marriage, but you're not being abused. So we're very, very careful in how we define it, and so that women know if they're in an abusive relationship or whether they're just in a bad marriage.
I was going to ask you, for instance, I know of some people, one in particular, no names, of course, nobody here. So it's not Eddie. It's not Eddie. I'm not talking about Eddie now. Is in a marriage with someone who looks after her incredibly well, is very good to her, doesn't criticize, doesn't abuse her, doesn't, none of those signs, but doesn't show very much love, never says I love you. The only time they have sex is if she instigates it, and I tell you, she's a very attractive woman. Is that a kind of abuse as well?
Well, you'd have to look at what else is happening. If it's just one thing, no, it's not abusive. Then he's, you know, there are other issues. You know, he's got intimacy problems for sure.
Yeah. Maybe he's gay.
Maybe.
They do have a child, so they have at least done it once.
Yeah, but you know, I can tell you, these are the things you can run through just briefly. One of the things that abusers do are relentless criticism.
Yeah.
If they control with money, if they control with sex, they will always isolate you, so they will destroy your family network and they'll destroy your friendships as well. So, you know, if you're doing all those things, yes, you're an abuser, but if there's just one or two, no, then there are other issues.
Yeah, those are just kind of issues. I'm just going, just talk amongst yourselves
like marriages on the whole, there's always going to be issues in any marriage, right? And the thing, and probably the danger would be to even overanalyze if you are in a pretty good marriage, like, and then decide that it's abuse and then cause problems that aren't there, you know. So there's also, I think some people might actually over dramatize that thing when stuff can be worked.
Oh, sure.
And I
sure.
think, yeah, so I'd, marriage is hard work, man. You know,
yeah,
it's like relationships are hard work, but I suppose you've got to draw the line between where am I working hard towards something that's useful or am I working towards something that's destructive?
Well, if both people want to work at it and making it work, then it helps. But if only one does, one person can't pull off a relationship.
No, you can't. Yeah.
But I think also, you know, you say relationships are hard work. I don't think they're as hard work as we make them to be because of our expectations. We grow up with and movies and television and the media give us such a rosy, idealistic idea of what relationships
unrealistic,
should be like.
Unrealistic, yeah.
And what did I say?
You know, idealistic and unrealistic. And I'm unrealistic, just adding this.
And you know, so almost we're bound for disappointment.
Yeah.
Almost.
Well, you know, it depends what, if you're going in with unrealistic expectations, sure you are.
Yeah.
You know, it's very unfair to expect your partner to make you happy.
Yeah. That doesn't
You know, mm. you, and why should anybody have that responsibility?
Yeah.
So
it's
you
not
need
possible,
to.
In
it's
fact.
Your responsibility to be happy for your partner.
Yeah. I mean, if you're both
to work
taking.
On yourself.
Mm.
Yeah.
If you're both taking on that responsibility to go out of your way to make the other person happy, well, then that's a recipe for success.
Yeah, fantastic. Find ways to be happy together, you know, and compromise. Like if you've got a, if you have something that is a passion of yours, that's not a passion of your partner's, don't expect them to be a part of it. So there's this thing of codependency and interdependency.
Interdependence. Well, that's
so interdependency is the, obviously and, the goal. You
and
know?
Also the independence. I mean, I know in one of my marriages, I took up a pastime.
Yeah.
Because my wife had taken it up, and she used to do it when she was much younger, and I thought, I can do that as well. I'll take it up. And I took it up to do something with her. I only discovered a couple of years later that she had taken it up in order to get some time for herself and actually resented that I shared it with her.
Yeah.
Then there are other couples that have to do everything together.
Yeah, I know. That's
And conversely, I know of a couple of couples who do absolutely nothing together except eat and sleep and hang around the home. All their pastimes are completely separate and they have a fabulous marriage.
Yeah.
Well, I think
space is good.
Yeah.
Whatever is anybody's normal. If it works for them, great.
Yeah.
Now, what about, are you healed of your addiction?
Oh, my God, yes. So healed. Yeah, sure.
I mean, have you given thought to perhaps you might meet a guy that, ooh, he takes your fancy and you get attracted to him. Are you going to go through all these checklists? Are you going to second guess? Are you going to doubt?
I wouldn't have to second guess because it's now so part of me. It's like part of my DNA. The same way that being a codependent and being so crazy was part of me, that's gone. Those kind of men I find so absolutely abhorrent and repulsive. They wouldn't even, I wouldn't draw them in. Before I always felt that my life was meaningless if I didn't have a man in it. I don't feel that at all anymore. I'm so excited by all the things I'm doing with my life and what's going on in my life that if a man comes in, great. And if he doesn't,
that's
I'm still
that's
great.
That's usually when it happens is when you're not looking for it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know.
Well, I'm very busy. You know, I'm so in love with myself at the moment that I don't want to have a man with me because he'll interrupt the conversations I'm having.
Yeah. Do you date?
No, I refuse to date.
Yeah.
No, I can't date. I can't. I could. It's just. It would paralyze me. No.
Yeah.
I can't even go for it for a coffee with a man if he doesn't have some kind of interest for me. No.
Yeah.
No, I won't.
Well, I guess once you've healed, then what you're projecting is what you're going to attract.
I'm sure.
And that's a healthy thing.
The same way that I attracted, you know, that garbage before. You know.
Yeah.
It's like I've now designed this man that will come into my life only because of who I am. And if he's not there, it's fine.
Yeah.
Look, my love of my life for the last 14 years really was my miniature Yorkie that I immigrated to America with. And he died just before I came here. So
That's
I'm still
terrible.
In mourning for him. And, you know, I didn't know if he was my husband or my child. He would switch.
Yeah. Oh, sweet, man.
You want to go talk a little bit? We've just got a few minutes left. We're not going to play Snips and Snips again. We're going to play out with another Kathy Raven song in a moment. First of all, Philippa, this book, is it available in all the usual?
Yes, it's all the usual, in exclusives. Right now it's in Sandton and Hyde Park.
Mm-hmm.
We've got on the 12th of August, which is next week, at the Rosebank exclusive, we've got a morning there at 10 o'clock, so people are welcome to come. And then it'll be in all the exclusives.
Can you just repeat the date?
On August the 12th. at 10 o'clock at Rosebank Mall at Exclusive
That's
Books.
Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday. And it'll be at in all the exclusives throughout the country and different stores as well.
It's called When Loving Him Hurts. It's really worthwhile to have in any home. It's not. It's about abusive relationships and how to survive them and how to get out of them. But it's really a life manual for a whole lot of other people too. And having said that, it went out of my head what I was about to ask you next, but I think Kathy's got a question.
Can I swap you a CD for a book?
I don't have books with me.
I can wait. Yeah. I can wait.
Yeah. Is there? Oh, did she bring you one?
They dropped one off at the studio, and okay. Also I collected this one.
Sure.
So
should we shake on it?
Yeah, I was just, when you're talking about not looking for love, I'm going to quote myself. It was a song I started to write and then gave up on. But It went, love is like a cat.
Yeah.
It doesn't come when you call it. But if you ignore it, suddenly it's there in your lap.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's
beautiful.
I like that. I love that.
Yeah.
Maybe Kathy and I can work on that.
I wonder if
Thanks, Eddie. Thanks,
love
Eddie.
Love is like a cat. I think we've got to have some like purring in the background. Eddie can do the purring.
He does that very well.
Yeah.
Especially when he's asleep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We can have competitions.
We're going to play out now with a Kathy Raven CD. Is it your CD? Is that in all the usual places?
Well, the way that I'm doing it is online. You know, digital is the way to go these days. And you can order it off my website, which is just kathyraven.com. And if you like it, get one. Get a few for your friends.
Very, very bluesy. We're going to listen to another one. Which is the one we're going to listen to now?
I think we're going to try Teresa, which is...
number one.
It's and the reason I'm choosing Teresa is because Teresa is about a relationship with yourself, which is kind of where we got to,
lovely.
Right, guys? It's about it's about loving yourself and enabling you to love other people by doing that.
Yeah. Sure, it's been... There's so much I want to talk about the book that my head is so full that I can't think of anything else. But if we had another hour, we would carry on. Thank you so much for
both of you for
being here, Philippa.
It's a pleasure.
Kathy.
Thank you.
We'll call it a draw.
Yeah.
I'm quite sure that Philippa would have known more questions of the other one. So we'll call it a draw.
I think next time we got to do this again, and then we have to do one, you know, with about relationships, and then we'll try.
Go and see Kathy at the Radium Beer Hall in Lubuta Avenue. That's this coming Saturday night. What time do you go on? 9 o'clock?
Usually about 9 o'clock.
About 9.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she'll be doing a lot of songs from the album, The Rooibos Tea Blues.
I will be.
And thank you, Eddie.
Thanks, Eddie. We love you, Eddie.
And this is Kathy Raven's song called Teresa.
I want to be more like Teresa. I want to see more like Teresa.
it real. We can give love, love, love. We can make it feel
just like
Teresa.
Just like
Teresa.
Just like
Teresa.
Just like
Teresa. Right now, right here, then I would live my life in love, not fear. Be more like, seem more like Teresa. Then I would live every day of the year with my heart wide open and a smile from ear to ear. Be more like, seem.